full Aretha. The full Aretha this morning. That's exciting.
It's a good way to start the week, right?
Yeah, very much.
All right,
so.
Well, let me do the intro since you're not doing it. It's First Things, December 28th. Steve Scher. We started with Aretha Franklin. What's that bring back memories of for you?
Oh, okay. Give me a moment. Well, I mean, the first time I heard that song and those accompanying songs, I was a teenager and my sisters and I would dance around the house in the Highland Park, Illinois. That's one first memory. Yes, that has to be the first memory.
Aretha Franklin. Okay, so I want to talk about Aretha Franklin, A, respect, B, the song and the idea behind it, and then C, some women who have carried this election for us and have helped to protect our democracy. That's the theme of today's podcast. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Yes. So Aretha Franklin, born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. And I'm from a suburb of Detroit, Dearborn. And Aretha Franklin grew up with her family in Detroit. Her father was a minister at a leading church in town in Detroit and was part of the heavy black church infusion of dignity, justice, mercy, determination that fueled the civil rights movement for decades in this country. And she would sing at church, and she became obviously known as an incredible singer, and that her ability to infuse an intensity, a determination behind the words that she would sing were known. And so she eventually cut an album, then it got bigger, and then began to have some really major hits. R-E-S-P-C-T, You Better Think, Say a Little Prayer, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. These are all considered anthems and powerful statements of women's liberation, their ability to control their lives, their agency in their lives. And I'm listening to that song right there, which of course I know, and you know, and probably everybody listening to this podcast knows. And there's that great line in the middle: your kisses are sweeter than honey, but you know what? So is my money. And that sense of human individuality, the ability to be your own person and to have your own life as a woman in America, and as a black woman in her case, even more difficult given the intersecting patterns of oppression and discrimination. So Franklin's amazing. And I remember a couple of, when Barack Obama was president, she performed at the Kennedy Center, and Barack Obama and Michelle Obama were there. And there was this amazing video of just her performing and them being just overcome by seeing her. Yeah. You remember that?
Yeah. Well, by her tearing up.
Yep. And she was a person who fueled the civil rights movement with proceeds from her concerts, from her music, like many comedians and musicians and athletes throughout kind of the modern racial history of America. They contributed significantly either out front in raising funds or behind the scenes, something that, you know, Charles Douglas, colleague at Common Power, has talked about as part of the celebrity capital that is part of the current voting renaissance in America. One last thing about Franklin. So I was reading about her last night, and as I knew I was going to do this podcast today, and she's buried at Woodlawn Cemetery in Detroit. She moved back to Detroit to the suburbs to be near her father and help him. He had some health issues late in his life, and then spent the last few decades of her life in the Detroit area. She's buried at Woodlawn Cemetery, which is where my mother and father are buried. So Franklin helps to bring it a little bit full circle for me this morning. Aretha Franklin, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. And what would we do without these messages, this leadership, and this infusion of the voting power, the civic power, the leadership of women in America today? That's what I'm thinking about this morning.
Yeah, every day. I mean, it is remarkable that you remind me of a story we heard about Dr. King too, whenever they were getting ready to march or there was arrests that were in the offing, he'd say, "Did you call Sammy? Don't forget, call Sammy," right? Because Sammy Davis Jr. and his cohort were among the people that were investing their capital way back then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yes, totally.
It's great to know that about Franklin. I did not know that she had invested that much in those days. That's incredible.
Yes. Yeah, she would, Bernard Lafayette, who we both know, one of the great foot soldiers of the movement, told me about going in the early 1960s when the Freedom Riders, after the Freedom Riders had gone south and had been badly beaten, put their lives on the line to uphold American law, not to break laws, but to uphold it. The end of discrimination in bus routes and in bus terminals, that he was invited north along with Diane Nash from Nashville to preach and to raise money in Detroit at Franklin's church with Aretha Franklin there. So she's been part of that. And I have tremendous appreciation for a cluster of women who have absolutely been the backbone of this election in this country. And three of them are in Michigan. And one of them has been receiving increased attention from the president in the last couple of days, but they all have gotten their attention from him. And it's this trio of the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, the secretary of state, Jocelyn Benson, and the attorney general, Dana Nessel. And all three of them have drawn the ire and anger and frustration of Donald Trump over the last several months, back to the decision to send absentee ballots to all registered voters that Benson implemented, to Gretchen Whitmer's decisions around opening or masking the state, to Dana Nessel's briefings that she has contributed to defenses against the Trump administration's Trump campaign's assault on this election. And yesterday or 2 days ago, Trump criticized Nessel for some of the statements she made in one of her court briefings, and said that because she criticized these conspiracy claims, she criticized these unfounded allegations, said that they are not patriots, that these folks are traitors to the American cause. And Trump really responded against that and said that she's the problem. And she, Nessel then yesterday responded back and very strongly just kind of shot it down, and then finished by saying, "Oh, and by the way, you're not our type, all right?" Because he had made it personal. And this kind of willingness to take on this argument publicly is a risk for any American, to do this. But it's particularly a risk if you're a woman, because the vitriol that comes at you from this body of right-wing QAnoners is so heinous that you are putting your life on the line, you're putting your reputation on the line, you're putting your sanity, your psychological sanity on the line. And I just have so much respect for those three women, plus Catherine Buchvar, the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania, Katie Hobbs, the Secretary of State of Arizona, and Jocelyn Brinson Bell, the Secretary of State in North Carolina. These are guardians of the American galaxy this year.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing time, isn't it, when the people have to be guardians of the democracy. But I guess what we're learning is that's really the status quo. We always have to be on the lookout and guardians of democracy in every country that has democracy, and this one included. I was surprised to see the numbers of neo-Nazis in neo-Nazi parties in Germany. I mean, it's just a movement that is thriving on illiberal and undemocratic beliefs. And we, you know, it's not like it isn't the norm in the human history. It is. That's what's so amazing, that there are so many people willing to stand up and fight for it, considering how the human history has been made up of tyrants who enslave and murder.
It absolutely is a constant, this hatred, this demonization of anybody who doesn't fit an Aryan kind of conception of the world, of the white Christian, particularly male, but if a female, a certain kind of female, mother, child rearer. But the constancy is also elevated in moments of time that occur in response to changes in our society, demographic changes, political progress, increased power of groups not traditionally ascribed it. In Dr. Carol Anderson, a professor at Emory University, has written a couple of great books. One that I've used a lot in my work, called One Person, No Vote, which is about voter suppression. But the book before that was even more influential in my thinking over time. It was called White Rage. And it's about the ways in which progress by people of color, particularly Black Americans, has been met consistently in periodic moments in American life by white rage, a response, a counter response to Reconstruction, to the progressive era of the early 20th century, to the civil rights movement, and then to the advances of associated with Barack Obama's presidency. So the period we're in now is one of those white rage eras in which the first Black president, was then joined by a Black attorney general, by increasing African-American middle class, joined with demographic changes leading to a rising part of the citizenry who are Latino, Asian-American, met by same-sex marriage rights, met by an attempt to have the first female American president, Hillary Clinton. All of these together produced this mass response. And we are in the middle of that today. We have the great privilege and challenge of living in the middle of that today. So I think about that, and I think about everything that's at stake. And here and Trump would refer to them as that woman or these women in Michigan, my home state, thinking about how they represent folks there or around the country, how they have stood up strong in this election. I do not think that we would be coming through this election without the leadership of these secretaries of state, of Nessel as attorney general, of Whitmer in Michigan. I stand in awe with full respect.
I hope you're not right that we're in the middle. I hope we're at the end, downward slope of this rage, but we're probably not, as evidenced by the crazy people of QAnon, you know, freaking out over 5G and the like, but in the bombing in Tennessee. But what's the next step for these leaders? You know, I mean, in terms of the short-term political, the next steps are to, you know, stay in stay the course. But what's the next step for these leaders? They've come out and made these statements. They stood their ground. How do they, I don't know, how do they take it further or continue to govern effectively?
So I have done a series of lectures about kind of what I call these defining eras in American life. And it strikes me as I should pull this one back out again and do this lecture again in the early 2021. These periods, the Civil War with Reconstruction, the Progressive Era, the Civil Rights Movement and Response, and now, the period we're in now. And one thing that we note when we look at these, and these are eras that historians have pointed to as these kind of moments, eras that roiled America when the turmoil was massive, the pain was real, and they were transformative, sometimes progressive, sometimes, no, always with a conservative backlash. One defining characteristic is they last around a couple decades. They last about two decades long. And then what has happened traditionally in that span of time is there's been progress, then there's been a massive response to it, like massive resistance during the civil rights response era. And eventually the conservative forces have held sway. They have held sway. So we made progress, but then that progress began to be undermined and taken apart, dismantled steadily. We saw that now part of the era we're in right now is because of the voting rights advances of the 1960s have been dismantled steadily since the 1960s. So one thing that those leaders today and us in solidarity with is that we have to stand strong enough and be engaged enough that we don't give up the field and allow the conservative forces to reassert and to implement even stronger. That is what cannot be done. And that's what's coming after this election victory for Biden and Harris, and is coming in Georgia and everywhere in this country, the next wave of the response. So we need a Whitmer and a Benson et al. To run again. We need to stay strong enough to take that courage that they've displayed and hold on to it and run again. We as voters and citizens need to stand up and show up in a Georgia, in a Michigan, in a North Carolina, in an Arizona to support these folks and to assert the progressive gains that we've made around no excuse absentee voting, around waiving of signature requirements this year. We all have to not stand down. That is the next thing for us, to not stand down. So glad that we're all engaged now. This includes me. So glad that we're doing what we should be doing all the time. And we have to stay the course. We have to devote our time, our treasure, our lawn, our yard signs, our lectures. Please join my lectures tonight and tomorrow on Georgia. Go to Eventbrite and look for my name and register. We have to stand up every day. If Dana Nessel can stand up to Donald Trump and risk militia terrorists surrounding her home in Michigan, then I sure as hell can do the work of Common Power, get up every morning and do a podcast with you. And then at the end of the day, vote. Get others to vote. call people to vote, text people to vote. That's what we need to do. It's really a system. And so that's the answer to your question, Steve, is that we need them, the leaders, to stay strong, but the leaders stay strong when they have people who stand behind them. You can't lead without people who will follow you. We need to follow them, push them, support them every day, and then they will stay strong. If they feel abandoned, then of course they'll say, forget this. Why even work? Why even fight? So we have to let them know we're with them. 8 days to try to give it everything we've got. I believe we can win these races. I believe the hill is still high to climb, but we can win these. More importantly, whatever happens there, I know, I don't just believe, I know that we're going to show up all the time going forward. That's what Common Power is about. That's what these podcasts are about. Let's go. We have 8 days left in Georgia.